This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 197 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron.
Not all ingredients are created equal. When I cook a Blue Apron meal, I know I'm getting fresh, high-quality ingredients.
And because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, you're reducing food waste. So it's a meal plan you can feel good about.
I know that I can't wait till my next delivery. I think it's in about 2 or 3 weeks. So are you looking forward to your next one, Sam? What are you getting?
Ooh, I have one coming tomorrow. I've got...
Oh, gosh. What is it?
I have an Italian-spiced pork pizza coming, hoisin-glazed chicken with sesame noodles and spicy marinated cucumbers, and beef knockwurst and sauerkraut. I'm excited to see if I have to make the sauerkraut. You never know.
So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/outlander.
You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait.
That's blueapron.com/outlander.
Blue Apron, a better way to cook. So announcements. The only announcement I can think of is that some actor, and I didn't catch the name of it, posted a picture of the script, and they were doing the read-along, not the read-along, we do the read-along. They were doing the read-through, or the round table, the read-through of the final script of the season.
Wow.
So they are getting close to finished with season 3 filming, which is exciting.
So excited. And that little, not little, that picture that Sam posted, holy monkey balls. What was that about? Like, he already had a fabulous physique. Is trying to get like extra chiseled? Is this like getting ready for Jamie on the Ridge or something?
I have no idea. Maybe that's, Jamie's been sailing boats and climbing mizzen masts and ropes and being an all around badass on a boat when he's not puking. Maybe those abs are from puking.
That's funny.
It's so funny you laughed.
I didn't.
I know. All right, then. With that, we will move on to our read-along. Chapter 50, entitled, I Meet a Priest.
Martina P. writes, this is a pretty strange, however, also very amusing chapter, and it moves the story at an unbelievable pace. The title could have been Claire in Wonderland. We do get a dazzling description of her surroundings, her encounter with animals, and also very offbeat characters. So, Claire is overboard. Whoopsie. She floats, travels toward Hispaniola, or Haiti. She guesses it is about 4 a.m. when she is aware of her surroundings. She rearranges herself with the casks and ropes so she can sleep while the current takes her toward land. And at about dawn, she hits the shore. Now, I got to say, I would hope I would have the wherewithal, because if I didn't think like Claire did, I would drown. I mean, I'm a good swimmer. But I would drown, even hang on to something, because you fall asleep and you like let go. Homegirl was like, let me arrange my surroundings so I can nap, because bitch be tired.
I mean, this is right up there with all of the surprises. Lord John Grey again.
I like Lord Granger.
Lord Granger. surprise, here he is again. Super coincidence. Anyone else, the odds of being able to fall asleep while holding on to a cask with a rope. I mean, this woman has the best luck.
Oh, she does. And
she falls through the stones. Happens happens upon the hottest single Scottish man available in the countryside. Marries him. Lucky girl. I mean, they did get separated for a time. But, you know, I mean, she's got a lot of luck when it comes to her adventures.
Well, one of the things she has going for her is that they're getting closer or in tropical waters, or at least warm waters. So she's not as much in danger, I guess, of hypothermia. For example, if this were in the Northern Atlantic, bitch be dead.
Right. I mean, this isn't Titanic.
Exactly. A lot of bitches
were dead. I would like to have seen.
It's not very kind.
Though I would like them to do a scene with her in the barrel saying, I'll never let go, barrel.
Oh, Lord. Do you know why? I have no idea. I mean, I don't know where it came from, but do you know why I'm like saying a lot of bitch be? Because the last time I was at your house, I think this weekend, I don't know when, I was like, not forced, but a not so captive audience to RuPaul's Drag Race. I had never seen, I've only seen like 5 minutes of it. You had me like watch an entire episode and a half or something.
They're amazing.
I mean, maybe. It's just, it's not my kind of thing. I'm not anti it. It's just, if I have time to watch TV, like, not that it's mindless, but it's definitely entertaining, right? It's fluff. It's fun. That wouldn't be my thing. My thing for fluff or fun or whatever, I don't know. It's just something different. Like, there are things that I'm sure you wouldn't want to watch that I watch, but
oh, I know exactly what it is because they used to all be in my Hulu feed.
What is that?
Every single incarnation of Real Housewives.
Oh, there you go. That's a good example.
You cannot knock my RuPaul's Drag Race.
No, I'm not knocking it. I'm saying it's not for me. But no, not every single incarnation. Let me get this straight. I only watched two.
Why were they all in my feed?
Sorry, three. I have no idea. I didn't add the other ones. I don't watch the other ones. The only three that I watch. Wait, is it two or three? No, just two. I watch Real Housewives of New York and Real Housewives of New Jersey. Everybody else, I don't follow them. But those two shows, I have not missed one episode since their inception. So, not that I'm proud of it or anything, but...
Clearly you are.
I did say it with commitment. Oh my gosh. So, I think the whole bitch be whatever, if that comes out tonight anymore... I think that's because, I don't know why, because it's been like 4 days since I watched it.
I don't think you can put that on RuPaul. I think you need to put that on your Real Housewife fixation. They're worse and cattier than any of the RuPaul.
I haven't seen it in months because the last time I finished, I only watch Hulu. I don't have cable television. So I have to wait till the whole thing's done. And then this last time, like when it was like, where I'm still waiting for New Jersey. New Jersey, like Teresa's been out of jail and her husband is in prison, I think. And I watched the season with her. But at the end of the, or whatever, however it was done. Oh no, maybe that's it. I didn't watch the one with her. Anyway, whichever one that came that happened with her getting out of prison or whatever the last one was, it's like taken like 2 years to make it to Hulu.
This has to stop. I literally feel my brain cells dying.
Anyway, so please let me know, guys, if you have like guilty pleasures as well. Like, come on, Luann. Bethany. I've been a fan of Bethany since she was a not a housewife on Housewives. Okay, back to Gabaldon. Lisa T. writes, Claire wakens to a new dawn, literally and figuratively. Dawn and the sun are reminders of Jamie. Claire sets her course. So she was cold and sore and tired, but the porpoise was long gone. Now her list has switched from how to help the sick to, quote, get ashore, find water, find some means of quick transport to Jamaica, and find Jamie and the Artemis, preferably before the Royal Navy did, unquote. Eileen P. writes, Claire, brave woman that she is, goes along with Annika's plan, jumps into the ocean, and spends the night in the circular current drifting to shore. This reminds me of two things. First, at the beginning of Voyager, when Claire is remembering not stepping in puddles as a child for fear you could fall through. Second, when Jamie was struggling with swimming to Seal Island and found the current after his mother, Ellen's, spirit called to him. When Jamie found the current, he no longer needed to struggle. He just let it take him on his journey. Now, as instructed by Annika, Claire is allowing the current to carry her on her journey, going with the flow. However, like Jamie, Claire has her own struggle with life and death, with a life or death situation. For Claire, this happens when a hurricane hits after she reaches the shore. She prays while clinging to a tree, trying to prevent being sucked out to sea. The ocean is just one giant puddle, ready to pull her to places unknown. That's interesting. I mean, I saw the water connection, but I didn't think of the storm and the puddle. That's really cool, Eileen.
Well, she's clearly gotten over her water aversion or her puddle aversion. This is a much larger puzzle.
It's a good puzzle, Shama.
It's a good puzzle.
Bitch. I'm just kidding.
Nuh-uh.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be a fun. I am not even drinking. Seems she's in among the mangroves after she gets to shore. She's sinking into the mud with each step, and she makes her way to the shore or further up the shore. She holds the knife Annika gave her and feels the better for it. It gives her at least a feeling of some kind of protection. As the sun rises, she warms up, but then is drenched in sweat. She's almost taken out by a large black bird. The bird sounded like a cannon, apparently. So Eileen P. gives us some information on these birds. Frigate birds are really amazing. They can fly 4,000 feet high, aided by the updraft in cumulus clouds, and they can fly for weeks without touching down. The males inflate the red pouches on their throats to attract the females. I wonder if this is symbolic of Jamie searching for Claire. Oh, sorry, that's funny. The red throat? Yeah, that's funny. I'm sorry. She walks for a while, Claire does, and stops to rest. She sees what appears to be a fish sitting up. The sun went behind a cloud. It got cooler, and then tiny crabs and fish and sand fleas began to disappear. She could tell that something was up. When she looked into the sky, she saw, quote, a huge purple mass of boiling cloud coming over the hills. It was a storm on its way. A rainstorm would at least bring her fresh water because she was thirsty. Bitch be thirsty. Claire must be extremely thirsty if she is so occupied by her thirst. The irony is that she is surrounded by salt water. She references the following poem. Water, water everywhere, and all the boards did shrink. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. And this is by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. So Claire has to get her bearings, though, and not get lost. She saw the one thing that was in view above all others, a mountain. So she heads for it. She was holding her skirt up, and her skirt kept pulling loose from her belt, and she dropped her shoes along the way. The rain hit when the tide was thigh high. She ingeniously uses the kerchief around her shoulders to soak up rain, squeezes out the remnants of salt, then again, and sucks the water from it. The waves push her, knock her down. She's going back and forth about how smart it was to leave the porpoise. She's washed up onto a small inlet and is able to grab hold of a tree. She holds onto it for dear life and prays. She wakes, and it is daylight. She's shoved into the tree. She begins her walk again. Obviously, she climbs down. And each time she stops to rest, more of those odd little fish hopped up on the bank beside her. And one of the fish asked, "Are you English?" But of course, it wasn't a fish. It was a man. He was about middle height and quite burly. He was dressed shabbily and had a heavy canvas bag. Claire replies that, yes, she's English, and asks him for water. Now, he gives her some, and she tells him that she's a doctor. Now, he introduces himself as Lawrence Stern, or English speakers would normally say Stern, Doctor of Natural Philosophy of the Gesellschaft für Naturwissenschaft Philosophieren, Munich.
Really? Munich?
Exactly. She wrote Munich. What am I going to do? I'm ready. She wrote the German and Munich. Okay, München. But she wrote Munich, so I'm trying to do it. I know, it hurt my ears, but I did it. Lisa T. writes, again, Claire is a Sassenach. She is an English woman in a place where no English woman should be. Martina P. writes, I do like the Lawrence Stern character. Is he supposed to be a German naturalist? If so, his first name should be Lorenz, rather than Lawrence. No nitpicking, just an explanation. And she spells that, it is spelled differently. L-O-R-E-N-Z would be the German, I guess, version of Lawrence. What a coincidence, she continues, that he is acquainted with Jamie and that Claire happens to meet him on this remote island. The world population must have been significantly smaller 200 plus years ago. Anyway, this is my explanation why our characters keep on running into each other in all parts of the world. That, or it's a, what do we call him? Not Lord John, but Jorlan?
Lord John, Gondre?
There you go. Thank you. It's called a, say it again.
Gondre.
Lord Gondre. No, not the Lord, just Gondre. It's called a Gondre coincidence from now on. That's what we're calling him. All this stuff, whether it involves him or not, it's called a Gondre coincidence. So, a naturalist. He was going out to observe the birds, and he overheard Claire talking to a fish. That's how he kind of discovered her. And she gives him her name. She says, I am Claire Fraser, Mrs. James Fraser. She says she needs help to get to Jamaica, and can he help her? He says, yes, he can, but first, they need to get food and clothing. They get to a little house within a meadow. He leads her to this place, and it is called Hacienda de la Fuente. There were trails leading around the house, and there were sheep. As they approach the house, Dr. Stan introduces her to a man named Father Fogden, an English priest. He was slender, had a reddish beard, and long hair. Now, Fogden recognizes Stan and calls him Shitworm Man. Why? Because he collected parasites from the excrement of the sheep last time he was there. They were like a foot long. That's disgusting.
They got to work on their nickname.
Oh, Shitman, Shitworm Man.
Yeah. I'm sure you could have come up with something much more clever.
Bitch. I mean, maybe. No. I need to turn it off. Okay. Lisa T writes, this whole sequence is so funny. Even though it is not a favorite of mine, I hope we do get to see some of it. Katrina's expressions would be priceless. Okay. So, you know how I said, well, hopefully if you've listened, you may not remember it, but I did say a number of times, probably on social media, on our show, anywhere and everywhere, Voyager, of all 8 books thus far published, with the exception of Echo, which I won't say why, but if you've read it, I think you'll know what I mean. With the exception of Echo, Voyager is the most adventurous of the books, meaning, I guess, travel, but just adventure and holy crap. I mean, and we're not even, like, we still have, what, 13-ish chapters, and there's still a crap ton that happens. Oh my gosh. There's so much that happens. This book is all over the ding-dong place. Did you get that? All over the ding-dong place. Would you agree that it's one of the, if not the most adventurous of the books?
Well, there's definitely a voyage taking place.
Oh, summer.
As they,
don't be like that.
As they... Oh, summer.
You're not helping. Yeah. You're so literal.
As they voyage from place to place, there is a literal voyage taking place in this...
You just repeated yourself.
The third book entitled Voyager.
That's absolutely no answer. Father Fogden invites them in for lunch. They tell him that Claire is also English. And there's a spaniel, so I'm guessing it's, well, not guessing, it's a dog, a spaniel named Ludo. Lisa T. writes, quote, the reason for the name became clear as we entered the dilapidated courtyard. A tiny cloud of dragonflies hovered like blinking lights over an algae-filled pool in one corner. It looked like a natural spring that someone had curbed in when the house was built, unquote. Hot springs and dragonflies. Thought they were worth a mention. Of course, Lisa T. Always. So the whole hacienda looks like a magical place. The trees are so overgrown that they are overlapping and creating a tunnel-like atmosphere. The way Diana describes this house is very dreamlike. Overgrown nature encroaching onto man's abode. The place was very sparsely decorated, but did include an emaciated Christ figure. Literal, not like a Jamie is Christ figure, but like a literal Christ, figure of Christ. There was also a woman there. She was small, not over 4 feet, and she was solid. Her skin was a light mahogany, and she looked like a carved wooden doll. Claire clarifies, an ill-wish doll. Mm. This was Mamacita.
Good grief, Mamacita.
Eileen P. writes, Mamacita scares me. Then Claire describes her as an ill-wish doll, which makes me think of Leary. That really scares me. Martina P. writes, what on earth is Mamacita's deal? She is totally creepy. When the priest says that they'll have guests and he reintroduces Señor Stern, she acknowledges this with... I can't get it. There's so much to this. This is going to be like a very astounding chapter. And the stuff that I read is going to be like, I could never say. Oh, God. When the priest says that they'll be having guests, he introduces Señor Stern. And Mamacita acknowledges this with, see, the Christ killer. And he introduces Claire after she asks who this puta alba is.
Seriously.
I know. It's like one of the... It's awesome is what it is, but it's very offensive. The food is already ready, so they sit down to table. Father Fogden places a large brown coconut on the table next to his plate. Quote, the fibrous husk was darkened with age. The hair was worn off in patches, showing an almost polished appearance. Hello there, he said, patting it affectionately. And how are you keeping this fine day, Coco? Unquote. Seriously. So we've got a puta alba, a Christ killer, and a cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs priest. Literally, a cuckoo for Cocoa priest. Oh my gosh. Eileen P. writes, Father Fogden and Coco remind me of Tom Hanks and Wilson, the soccer ball in Castaway. Except in Castaway, I think Wilson helped keep Tom Hanks sane, while Father Fogden is just a bit nuts with his coconut. He tells Ludo that she's such a pretty lady. I don't know who she is, but she. They decided to see if one of... Oh, maybe it was Claire. They decided to see if one of Ermenegilda. They decided to see if one of Ermenegilda's dresses would fit her. Who is this? So Mamacita is not a happy gamper. She slops the food down. Claire observes this scene with interest, perhaps surprise. There wasn't much conversation until after the meal when Mamacita returned with fruit and cups and a pitcher. Sangria!
I mean, this party just got a lot more fun.
Seriously. I mean, you got a coconut, a puta alba, and sangria, and an ill-wish doll, Mamacita. Come on.
This whole thing just reminds me of the Mad Hatter.
Of course it does.
Like a tea party in Alice in Wonderland. Which is like...
This whole... I mean, from the talking fish, from the moment she starts to see this Funky Town stuff, like in this alternate reality, and then like the magical-ish looking house, this dude who like... Oh, man, this whole thing. Yeah, it's crazy town. It's awesome, but it's crazy town. So Claire is about to get her alky on. Should we be drinking sangrias for this episode? It's too late now, but it would have been nice. Claire takes a cup and is catapulted back to the 1960s. Taste and smell do that to us, you know. Fogden and Stan chat, and then the priest gets out a pipe and some strong-smelling herbs. This is hemp, we find out. Martina P. writes, this sangria-drinking, pot-smoking, and very likable Father Fogden is a hilarious character. His loving relationship with sheep poses a rather delicate question. Are we supposed to think that Father Fogden is a sheep shagger? Please correct me if I am wrong. English is not my mother tongue, and it could have been lost in translation. On second thought, maybe the loving care of the sheep is a replacement for his lost community or congregation. Whatever the cause, I like him, sheep shagging or not. Now they get to Claire and her biz. Stian explains his plan. They are to walk to the village to get a fishing boat to Cap Haïtien, or to walk further to Le Cap, the nearest port of any good size. The priest warns them of Maroons. These are escaped slaves. And these now live in the jungled hills. Now, I just reading what Diana wrote. That was on purpose. I'm just reading what Diana wrote, but... That, and again, 200 plus years ago, it's not us, I get it, but yeah, that's a kind of not, I mean, I would never call anyone that today. Ho dogs. Okay. Claire asks for some water to wash with. Fogden takes her to the patio and gives her a bucket to collect water from a spring. Does the priest believe that such springs have spirits living in them? No, but he does show her something that had come up in the spring the previous month. It was a small dried fish, pure white. And they have a conversation about it. And was it a ghost fish? It was, in fact, a blind cave fish. Quote, I've seen one only once before in a pool deep inside a cave at a place called Abandawi. And that one escaped before I could examine it closely. Mamacita was close behind them at this point. Lisa T. writes, quote, yes, there are hundreds of such springs. Some of them are said to have spirits living in them. But I do not suppose you subscribe to such superstition, sir, unquote. Lisa says, this is an echo of Outlander when they are at the Abbey and Jamie shows Claire the hot springs. He tells her that nothing lives there except the spirit of the spring. There is a terrible stench, and it's Arabella. It's a member of Father Fogden's flock, he says, but it's a sheep. So this priest has a flock of sheep and a pet slash friend, Coconut, and a scary mamacita. Then Claire connected what the priest had said. Sailors had murdered Arabella and roasted her poor body over a gridiron on the beach. It couldn't be the porpoise, could it have? And it was just that morning, so it was very recent. The priest is wont to allow maggots to devour the flesh of his dead sheep so he can have the skulls. And, of course, maggots. And that's why Arabella stank so much. She was that fresh. Eileen P. writes, what is it with collecting skulls? First Master Raymond and now Father Fogden.
And, you know, everyone in the 20th century who finds them. Yeah. And then sends them to forensics.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean,
it's all around.
I mean, perhaps in that time period, it was even less common. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't less common. I'm not from that time period. I imagine if I was walking around somewhere and happened upon, like, just a bone, like, not the whole thing. Like, it didn't look like a recent murder scene, you know, where you'd want to call the authorities and have and look for clues. I mean, if it's been that long since something took place, I don't know. Maybe I'd pick it up. Probably not. But I might.
I'll remember that next time we go for a walk in the boonies.
There is at least two carcasses on the property up that we only know about because the dog keeps bringing back pieces.
They're not people, are they?
No. One's like a deer. One's a cow. That makes sense. No.
I don't know what's up there. Ranchers, maybe?
Wild cows. No,
no, but you never know. Things happen.
No, we think one's a deer and one is like a coyote or something. Like a small dogish canine wild dog.
It's gross. So every other sentence is Stan asking about a type of animal because he's a naturalist, you know? Mm-hmm. At the sight of Mamacita, Fogden remembers Claire. He asks her if there is something that would fit her of, he starts to say a certain name, and Mamacita replies, they are much too small for such a cow.
Good what? Lord, this woman.
Like, and then Claire, oh girl, gets better. Then she takes Claire to wash and says in Spanish, wash away the blood on your hands, Christ-killing whore. Good. Wow. Does she think she's a Jew?
I don't know. Sounds like she's been watching Jesus Christ Superstar too many times.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So once she was cleaned and covered, she reflects on the priest. This is Claire. Quote, I wasn't sure whether his excursions into oddness were some form of dementia or only the side effects of long-term alcoholism and cannabis intoxication, but he seemed a gentle, kindly soul in spite of it. Unquote. Mamacita, not so much. Claire goes into a small bedroom, and it was different from the rest of the house. It had feather pillows, a red wool bedspread, and candles. This must be Hermenegilda stuff. She has a look around and then leaves, because it's probably not very safe in there for a Christ-killing whore.
Now with Mamacita roaming around.
Exactly. She finds Stan and they chat about the priest. Just after he says he'd known him for a few years, he asks Claire if she knows a James Fraser from Edinburgh.
Of course.
Oh, what do we call it again? Grungeon? Grunger? Grunger? Grungeon?
Grunge.
Oh my God, seriously? Grunge, you're right. I'm never going to get it. Grunge. Grunge. Grunge coincidence. She says that her husband's name, thanks very much, and he describes him, and yes, it's the same one. They met in the brothel, as you do with Jamie, with Jamie. And Jamie had come to the rescue of a woman in the brothel. Jamie had told him, Stan, his real name. They had talked about spiders because that had been how they'd met. There was a woman, I guess she's afraid of spiders and she screamed and that's how he came to her rescue. But they also talked about caves. Now, isn't that, interesting.
You haven't even gotten there yet.
But he said caves. They talked about it. I'm just making sounds.
That's all you do.
I know.
Sometimes you think that they're words, but usually they're just sounds.
It's all just sounds. Eileen P. writes, so Lawrence, Stan, and Jamie know each other. It's a small world. When Lawrence tells Claire about how he and Jamie met at the brothel, we see Claire's insecurity surface again. She just had to check that Jamie hadn't been sampling the goods. Stan tells her there are caves there on the island, many caves, and many still unvisited. He returns to Abandawe. It is considered by the escaped slaves as a most sinister, sacred spot.
I was pretty sure that's not what it meant. I don't think so.
That's why I corrected myself. He gives her a lesson about some of the surrounding islands and topography. Now, pirates used to hang out at Tortuga, for example. She asks about buccaneers, and Stan tells her that an informant had told him they were sodomites. To a man. Okay. Just then, Mama Sita tells them there is more food. Stan tells Claire that Fogden had found Mama Sita in Havana. There, he'd met Ermenegilda. She was the young wife of some don, and they ran away with each other. That is, Ermenegilda and Father Fogden. And they took Mama Sita. And they took Ludo. The English had invaded Cuba on that day, and the two were able to escape. Now, Ermenegilda died 2 years later. They would never leave each other. Now, no one comes to that place for fear of her ghost, but Stan comes, because he's a scientist, and he's not afraid of no ghost.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm on a roll, but not. The next morning before they leave, Claire asks about the ship that had been there the day before. He said he couldn't recall what they wore, but that their leader had a hook. Grange, coincidence. Uh-uh. Claire freaks out. Yay! It has, you know, she's thinking, Fergus. And the ship is still there, he says. It's beached. So they make their way to the beach. They come to the crest of a hill, and sure enough, there's the ship, the Artemis. Claire sees Murphy and yells at him, running down the hill. She knocks him down, and then Fergus is there, and then Marsali. She finds out Captain Rains is dead, and the storm that she'd walked through had struck the Artemis and beached her. She looks around, but there's no Jamie. Fergus is all, what? He's not with you? So it seems no one knows.
What was he
like? I'm not doing it again. It seems no one knows where Jamie is just then. Eileen P. writes, Claire notices, quote, brilliant yellow butterflies shining like a tiny sun, unquote. I wonder if the sun reference means that Jamie is coming. And Martina P. writes, another very joyous coincidence is that the Artemis is stranded on the beach of the island. Now, Martina P., some people say coincidence, and other people say grange.
I swear I'm not drinking, y'all.
You're not the one saying it. I am.
Know, but I'm not drinking it wrong.
No, but it's great. It's going to be the rest of the hashtag. Oh. It's a hashtag for the grange. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my gosh. See, we don't need alcohol, people. We're good. So I'll start again. Martina P. writes, another very joyous coincidence that the Artemis is stranded on the beach of the island and Claire is reunited with Fergus, Marsali, and crew. However, it ends with a cliffhanger. Nobody is aware of Jamie's whereabouts.
That's the worst sound you could ever make.
What did it sound like? A bad foghorn?
I feel like it should have a bicycle horn over it.
Wait, was that worse than Jared? Come on.
No, no, it wasn't. I take it back. That was not the worst. Okay, that just sounded like you dropped shit.
Sorry.
That was a terrible one. I preferred the da-na-na-na-da-na.
Yeah, that was only funny if I can like get my stuff together and like actually do it at a good time. And I'm reading so much that I don't, you know, I'm not looking up to look at the little sound effects. Say two.
And that was chapter 50. Join us next week when we discuss chapters 51, entitled In Which Jamie Smells a Rat, and chapter 52, entitled A Wedding Takes Place. I wonder what happens in chapter 52.
Huh. Could it be a grande?
I don't think it's a grande.
I'm sorry. I'm going to forget how to say it. You're going to have to remind me next time, and I am going to keep using it because that makes me laugh.
Anyway, and we may also have a special guest joining
Yay!
Us for a
we can't wait. Week. Yes, ma'am. So thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode and many, many grandes. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod. That my young love